translation. Thereafter, Garuda, the chief of birds, unloaded Mandara Mountain from his shoulder and brought it near the water. Then he was asked by the Lord to leave that place, and he left. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Garuda was asked by the Lord to leave that place because the snake Vasuki, who was to be used as the rope for churning, could not go there in the presence of Garuda. Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu, is not a vegetarian. Hare Krishna. He eats big snakes. Vasuki, being a great snake, would be natural food for Garuda, the chief of birds. Lord Vishnu therefore asked Garuda to leave so that Vasuki could be brought to churn the ocean with Mandara Mountain, which was to be used as the churning rod. These are the wonderful arrangements of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nothing takes place by accident. Carrying Mandara Mountain on the back of a bird and putting it in its right position might be difficult for anyone, whether demigod or demon. But for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is possible, as shown by this pastime. The Lord had no difficulty lifting the mountain with one hand, and Garuda, his carrier, carried all the demons and demigods together by the grace of the Supreme Lord. The Lord is known as Yogeshwara, the master of all mystic power. Because of his omnipotence, if he likes, he can make anything lighter than cotton or heavier than the universe. Those who do not believe in the activities of the Lord cannot explain how things happen. Using words like accident, they take shelter of ideas that are unbelievable. Nothing is accidental. Everything is done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the Lord himself confirms in Bhagavad Gita 9:10, Mayad yakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Whatever actions and reactions occur within the cosmic manifestation all take place under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, because the demons do not understand the potency of the Lord, when wonderful things are done, the demons think that they are accidental. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th chapter, 6th chapter, of the 8th canto, 6th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Demigods and Demons Declare a Truce. Avaropya girim skandhat suparna patatam vara yayo jalanta utsrijya harina sa visarjita. Thereafter Garuda, the chief of birds, unloaded Mandara Mountain from his shoulder and brought it near the water. Then he was asked by the Lord to leave that place, and he left.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shibati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Bhaschitya Deshatarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is all part of a lengthy
description given here in the 8th canto of the unfolding of a number of different events with different elements in them, and it is quite lengthy, and there are many twists and turns in the whole, the development of all the different events. So here, though, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has saved the demigods and the demons who were in the process of being crushed by Mandara Mountain, which is solid gold, and therefore it is very dense, and therefore a small amount, if you measure it, you know, an inch by an inch by an inch, is heavy because of the density of gold. So the demigods and demons, they tried to carry Mandara Mountain to the ocean of milk. And on the way, they found they couldn't manage any longer. And so they just were forced to let it go. Unfortunately, some of them were under it when the others let it go. And, well, such is life in the material world. Sometimes it just doesn't work out. No matter if you try your best, even. So some of them got crushed under Mandara Mountain. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead intervened, lifted the mountain with one hand, and then Garuda, the Lord put Mandara Mountain on the back of Garuda, and then not only Mandara Mountain, but it seems the demigods and demons also got on, and away they went to the ocean of milk. And then Garuda, when they arrived there, the actual word used is unloaded. It's a sort of, you know, what? Slightly rough term, sort of like just unloaded it. He let it off his back. And then the Supreme Personality of Godhead requested him, please go. Because as Srila Prabhupada mentions here, the idea was that Vasuki, the great celestial serpent, was going to come and be the rope, and Mandara Mountain was going to be the churning rod, and that rope would be put around Mandara Mountain, and then back and forth, the demigods and demons would pull the rope, or Vasuki, and back and forward like this, Mandara Mountain would rotate back and forth in one direction, then back in the other direction. And this would churn the ocean of milk. And from the ocean of milk, different things would come, particularly the elixir of immortality. But different things would come. Traditionally, of course, this is how in India, at least in Vedic times, I don't know how much today, they would make butter from yogurt, churning rod, some rope around it, and you can just do it yourself if you've sort of know how it's done. Have you any of you ever done that? Churned yogurt? It's nice. It's good exercise. When we did it, I only did it once. It took some time. It really took some time before we started getting butter. But eventually we did. And we offered it to the Lord. And I must admit, it was very tasty. Western butter is made from cream. And traditionally in India, butter is made from yogurt. So it has a taste, a little bit of a tang to it. Because it's yogurt. It's the fat of the yogurt, basically. Yeah. So it's nice. It's really nice. And it's generally white. White in color. Whereas butter made from cream, it tends to be more on the yellow side. So this was the idea that Vasuki will be used as the rope wrapped around Mandara Mountain, and in this way, demigods, demons will churn, and in this way, different things will be generated out of the ocean of milk. So, but as Prabhupada points out here, Vasuki would not come because Vasuki was afraid that if he did come, Garuda might be tempted. I don't know if Garuda offers his snakes before he eats them, or you know, or if he does, who he offers them to. But we all know what it's like to be faced with some extremely delectable prasadam, even when we're meant to be on a diet or something like that. It can be a challenge. So the Lord was concerned if Garuda stayed there, he might be tempted to the point of actually doing something. Or if not that, at least Vasuki was not prepared to come because he felt too uneasy that Garuda might suddenly pounce on him, because this is the way of Garuda. He does this. And this is mentioned, of course, in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. There's the description there. The build-up to the Kaliya Damana Leela, when Krishna subdues the Kaliya serpent. So it's described there how Garuda was terrorizing some snakes, right? And so Kaliya came to the lake there, Kaliyadaha Lake, to escape Garuda. It's a bit of a long story, but that's an example. Garuda, they would have to offer him, so he wouldn't just come and just attack all of them. They had to offer him a snake every so often. So this is Garuda. Even there's also, our acharyas mention in commentaries on the 10th canto that when Krishna manifested the Manasi Ganga at Govardhan Hill, that just prior to that, one sage visited Vrindavan, traveling mendicant, devotee, visited Vrindavan, and everyone gathered in the evening for a program, Krishna Katha type of program. And that devotee told the bridge buses that I just came from the Ganges to the north. I just came from there. And it was really amazing. That Ganges is amazing. Because when I was there, I saw Garuda. Garuda came flying by. And Garuda had in his claws, hanging from his claws, was a snake. Yeah, was a snake. And Garuda flew low just across the top of the Ganges. And this snake, his body hanging down from the claws of Garuda, the snake was dragged through the waters of the Ganges. And as soon as that happened, just when Garuda had crossed the Ganges, that snake transformed into a four-armed inhabitant of Vaikuntha in front of my eyes. And right in front of my eyes, he went to Vaikuntha. Some sort of airplane came with Vaikuntha Vasis on it, and they took him, and off they went to Vaikuntha. And so that devotee was saying, this Mother Ganges is amazing. You just contact the water, you can go to Vaikuntha. And the evidence is the snake. So all the bridge buses, they are, you know, in terms of the Leela, in terms of how things work in all the different arrangements for the whole lifestyle there in Vrindavan, when it comes to religion, they're very religious people. Of course, they don't worship Krishna in a formal sense. They don't worship Krishna. They just love Krishna. And, of course, that really is the essence of their religion. But it's very different from everyday religious performances as done by typical Vedic householders. They'll have some altar at home and they will do different whatever, pujas and things. They'll have some little program at home on a regular basis. So the bridge buses, they love Krishna. And of course, that's the essence of everything for them. But in terms of their just general lifestyle, they're very religious. And they worship Lakshmi Narayan. They worship Lakshmi Narayan in their homes. They have their altars at home. And you see that when Krishna had killed Shakat Asura and kicked the cart and all the pots and everything just went everywhere and the cart exploded. And then everyone came running out, hearing this terrible crashing noise. They all came out, and there were some other little older children there, and the adults asked the older children what happened, and they all said in a very matter-of-fact way, oh, he did it. Yeah, it was him. It was Krishna. Like, yeah, okay. It was Krishna. It wasn't like, wow, it was Krishna. It was incredible. It was just, yeah, oh, he did it. And the adults, of course, couldn't believe it, because as far as they were concerned, Krishna was definitely just a little three-month-old child. So they thought, this is ridiculous. But the older children, they would not change their story. And there were no, you know, like cameras running, security cameras or anything like that. So it was kind of unprovable. So they just said, oh, well, okay. He was saved by Lord Narayan. And then Mother Yashoda does various sort of ritualistic performances for the protection of Krishna. And some of them, at least, involved different prayers to Narayan, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in that context that he's the Supreme Lord. So this is there, even though the bridge buses, of course, Krishna is their life and soul completely, and even more than their lives. He's just absolutely everything. But still they have this type of religious sense focused on Narayan. And in that sense, they think sometimes the idea may occur to them that, yeah, Vaikuntha, if we worship Narayan nicely, we may go to Vaikuntha. And now this devotee came and said all this. They thought, fantastic. Let's just drop everything. Let us drop everything and just go to the Ganges, and we're going to bathe in the Ganges, and maybe we're going to stay by the Ganges and bathe every day, and then we'll go to Vaikuntha. And they were all saying, right, yes, Vaikuntha Loka Kijai. So our acharyas discuss all this, and so they actually, of course, Krishna was not happy, but they packed up and off they went. And on the way, they stopped by Govardhan Hill, by where Manasi Ganga is now. Actually, Manasi Ganga was already there. That's another story. But they stayed the night near where Manasi Ganga is. And they're all talking in the evening. They're talking about, you know, we're going to the Ganges. We're going to Vaikuntha. And Krishna said to Nanda Maharaj, you know what? The Ganges is right here. And everyone thought, this is just some silly talk by a little boy. But the gopis said, no, it's true. We saw, we have seen. Go with Krishna and you'll see. So anyway, Krishna took them there and called out, Ganga Devi, Ganga, Ganga Mai. And out came Ganga Devi on the back of her crocodile. And then they accepted it. But anyway, of course, the main point is Garuda. Garuda is not vegetarian. It's kind of amazing, isn't it? Garuda is a devotee. He's not just a devotee. He is a constant companion of the Lord. And even in one sense, he's a type of form of the Lord. And he is also an expansion in Dwaraka. He is an expansion of, if I remember correctly, Subal, one of the cowherd boys. If I remember correctly, Subal. He's an expansion. But as Prabhupada says here, he is not vegetarian. So how to digest all of that. Anyway, we say Hare Krishna. Because Prabhupada, there were a few occasions when Prabhupada was asked, you know, some sort of slightly fantastic questions. And Prabhupada would say, the answer to your question is Hare Krishna. So, Garuda, how is Garuda not vegetarian, but so close to the Lord and dear to the Lord, extremely dear, but he's not a vegetarian? Well, what can we say? Hare Krishna. So Vasuki left. Garuda left on the request of the Lord, because otherwise Vasuki would not come and the churning would not happen. And all this, as we said, rather complex chain of events and different things happening back and forth. And it's really quite a story. If anyone had the capabilities, it would make an amazing sort of 3D movie, I imagine. But it's very interesting how it unfolds through the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So then, Srila Prabhupada goes on to say that Garuda, well, the Lord, Prabhupada says, nothing takes place by accident. The Lord put the mountain on the back of a bird. Sri Sri Radhagalokananda Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shishi Gornitai Kijai. The Lord put a mountain on the back of a bird and put it there, Prabhupada says, putting it in its right position might be difficult for anyone, whether demigod or demon. This is Srila Prabhupada, sort of tongue-in-cheek. It might be difficult. It might be impossible, too. We just saw all the demigods and demons just couldn't carry it, and they just got overwhelmed by it all. So, yes, Prabhupada says, it might be difficult. But for the Supreme Lord, something which is difficult, something which is impossible for someone, ordinary person, even a demigod or big, big celestial demon. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can do it with one hand. He can do it with one finger. He can do it just by looking at it. He can move it just by his glance. Just by thinking about it, he can do it. For the Lord, nothing is impossible. As I'm sure many of you are aware, back in, I think it was 74, or something like that, the Chaitanya Charitamrita marathon happened. In 2 months, they produced the 17 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And just before they really launched into the marathon, there was famous morning walk of Srila Prabhupada's. And was it Radha Vallabha or Rameshwar? Anyway, Prabhupada was speaking, I think, with Radha Vallabha, who was the production manager of the American BBT. I think he started talking to Rameshwar, then Radha Vallabha was called over. So, we want to increase the rate of production. How long will it take to do 17 books? And the devotee, I think Radha Vallabha, but the devotee said, Srila Prabhupada, we are now doing one book every 2 months. We will make a special effort. We will do one book a month. We will double it. And I guess he expected that Prabhupada would say, very good, double it, good work. But Prabhupada didn't appreciate it at all. And Prabhupada said, no, I want them all done in 2 months. And whoever it was said, famously said, but Prabhupada, that's impossible. And Prabhupada very famously replied, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So, of course, the devotee was not thinking on his feet quick enough. If he had, he might have turned around and said, well, Prabhupada, we are fools. So impossible is a word in our dictionary. So, you know, what can we do? But anyway, they did it. And even though it took a superhuman effort, they did it. So, but for the Lord, nothing's impossible. In Australia one time, in a public program, some sort of quote-unquote clever fellow tried to catch Srila Prabhupada out. Prabhupada had been talking about how Krishna can do anything. He's omnipotent. He can just do anything. And this fellow said, if Krishna can do anything, can he make a mountain which is so heavy that even he cannot lift it? And you can just imagine, he was thinking, ha ha, caught you. If Krishna can do anything. And Prabhupada answered, yes, he can. He can make a mountain so heavy, even he cannot lift it. And then he'll lift it. So yes, what is actually impossible for even demigods and demons is possible, not just possible, but is easy. Just child's play for the Lord. Nothing. No endeavor, nothing strenuous in the slightest, no exertion. And therefore, for the devotees, in that sense, nothing is impossible. Because Krishna is there for the devotees. And if Krishna desires, if the devotee has some special service to do, which is beyond his or her normal physical capacity or, you know, capability to think creatively, by the mercy of Krishna, the devotee can do it. So in that context, Srila Prabhupada said that just as in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is telling Arjuna that the battle is already won by my will. It's already won, that's it. There's no question at all what may happen, will it go this way or that way. It's already won. You just do your duty. So in the same sense, Srila Prabhupada said that Lord Chaitanya's movement is going to spread all over the whole world. Even in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says that Lord Chaitanya's movement is going to be spread to other planets. Maybe the crazy scientists, maybe they will be able to help in some way. who knows, with interplanetary travel anyway, that's a moot point in one sense. But, yeah, even to other planets, what to speak of taking over this entire planet, and we might say, what? That sounds impossible. Well, in one sense, it is. If it's just up to us and our own capacities, well, it's a tall order. But Prabhupada made the point. This is what is going to happen. This is Lord Chaitanya has said that. Priti viti achiyata nagaradi gram sarvacha prachara hoibe moranam. My holy names will be chanted in every town and village on this planet. And when he said that, he did not mean that, you know, like some group of devotees was going to go zipping around from town to town, doing a 5-minute Harinam in each town, and in this way go to every town and village. He meant that Krishna consciousness was going to become established in every town and village as just the way of life. So, it's impossible. But, because it's the will of Lord Chaitanya, and Prabhupada made the point, it's practically already happened. It's just waiting to happen, and it will happen by his arrangement. And if we just stick at it and try our best to play some part, be useful in the spreading of Krishna consciousness, despite our numerous and sometimes quite significant shortcomings, but we may actually get some credit. And in the future, the devotees in the future, when all this has actually unfolded, they will then go through the histories and read about how Navina Nirada Prabhu did so many things, and the devotees went out from Bhaktivedanta Manor and distributed millions of books. Yeah. And you all are going to be heroes in the history books of the future. Due to being empowered by the Lord, and the Lord is going to empower, it's just a question of who is willing to stand up and become empowered. That's all. And those who insist on remaining on the mental platform and just, you know, well, you know, what can I do sort of mentality, and they're not willing to try, well, they won't exactly perhaps be left along the wayside, but they're not going to have that good fortune of really being there in the forefront of fulfilling the mission of Lord Chaitanya. So Prabhupada's making this point here, basically. Wonderful arrangement of the Lord. The impossible happened. All the demigods and demons couldn't do it. But the Lord did it with one hand. He could have done it with one finger. If he just flicked it or something, it could have happened. For him, it's nothing. So, nothing is accidental. Srila Prabhupada one time said that everything exists except chance. There is no such thing as chance. It doesn't exist. There are only events which happen by certain means that you cannot perceive. And, well, Prabhupada makes the point here. Because the demons do not understand the potency of the Lord, when wonderful things are done, the demons think that they are accidental. Yeah, some chance, some accident. But what is chance, what is accident, It is not chance. It is not accident. It is something happening with very specific causes. Very specific causes. But you think it's chance or accident because you don't have the perceptive capacity to see how it's going on. You are, so to speak, not tuned in to how it's happening. But it is, there is an actual process, concrete process behind it happening. I could tell you one little story. You may have heard this story, but it is set in the great American Depression of whenever it was, 80 years ago or so. And it was extremely difficult to get a job. And if there was a job available, there were at least 500 people there to get the job. And so one time, the Western Union Communications Company, they needed a Morse code operator. You know what Morse code is? The different letters of the alphabet are represented by different combinations of short sounds and long sounds. Like an S is three short sounds, dot, dot, dot. An O is three long sounds. They're called dashes, dash, dash, dash. If you know something about Morse code. So they needed a Morse code operator, but to be a Morse code operator, you got to know the code. It's not so easy. So they couldn't find one, so they advertised. And sure enough, 500 people came. And who knows Morse code? I think nobody sitting here. So you got all these people, they're desperate to get work, desperate to get money. So they just came even though they didn't know Morse code. And the boss told them, line up and we will interview you one by one. And this was going on in a building which was under construction. So they're all construction noises happening, sawing and hammering and things like this, crashing and banging. And after a few minutes, one young man at the end of the line, you know, they're going in and coming out, going in one by one. And one young man from the end of the line came running up to the front. He jumped the queue and just went straight into the boss's office. And all the other men in the line thought, wow, he jumped the queue. We're going to get him. Who does he think he is? Sure enough, 2 minutes later, the boss came out with his arm around the young man's shoulder and said, you can all go home. He's got the job. And then they really thought, we're going to get this young fellow. But then the boss said, you see, the thing is, we need someone who knows Morse code. And you see here, we've got all these workers working. You see, we've got people hammering. They're hammering in Morse code. Bang, 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 bang. That's O-S. They're hammering in Morse code, and the message is, if you understand this, just come to my office immediately. I'll give you the job straight away. Anyway, it's a bit of an old story. You may have heard it before. So the thing is, they were all there in the middle of it, but because they weren't tuned in, they didn't get it. So people think that things are happening by accident, but there is no such thing. On the material level, there is karma. There is karma on the material level. And on the transcendental level, there is Krishna's mercy. And this is actually how things are going on. And let me just close by telling you another little story. For the devotees, well, everything is done for the devotees, for the sincere devotees. Everything is going on by the arrangement of the Lord, by the will of the Lord, and under his supervision, for their benefit, for their development in Krishna consciousness. Even sometimes apparently bad things happen, but really they are part of Krishna's plan for the betterment of the devotee. So one time, this is sort of Puranic story, one time there was a king and he had a minister, and the minister was a real devotee. He was just dedicated devotee. And the king, he was sort of a bit of a devotee, you know, 50-50, depends on the situation, something like that, a little bit on the edge. And the king was very fond of hunting, as Kshatriyas, it's often the case with Kshatriyas. And so they would go hunting. And one day the king, he was aiming an arrow at some creature, and somehow he tripped or slipped or something, and the arrow jumped out of his hand, cut off the top of his thumb. Have you heard the story before? Yeah? Cut off the top of his thumb. And the king immediately got extremely upset. Look at this. It's terrible. What a disaster. But the minister, staunch devotee, he immediately said, "No, it's Krishna's mercy." And the king said, "What? Krishna's mercy? How could it be? I lost part of my thumb. That's ridiculous." And the minister said, "No, it's Krishna's mercy." And the king got really upset, with the minister, and told his soldiers, "Lock him up. Lock him up." So they did. Some days later, the minister's still in jail. King, somehow his thumb is sort of, it's not as bad as it was. So he decides to go hunting again. And he got lost in the forest. And he got arrested by some sort of aboriginal forest dweller type people. And they told him, "This is fantastic. We're so glad we met you." And he said, "Yes, well, I'm the king, so it's your lucky day." And they said, "Right, yeah, we're really happy, because we need an important person to be a human sacrifice for Mother Kali. And so you're the person." And king couldn't do anything. So they prepared the fire sacrifice, whatever they do. And then the priest came and inspected the body of the king. And he found, look, his thumb, part of his thumb is missing. His thumb is damaged. His body is not whole. We cannot sacrifice him. So they apologized to the king and sent him away. And the king was so relieved. It was Krishna's mercy. It really was. Although it didn't seem like it. My minister was right, but I had him locked up. Oh, no. And he went back and released the minister and apologized to him. "I'm so sorry. It was just such a nonsense on my part. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me." And you know what the minister said? He said, "No, it was Krishna's mercy." And the king said, no, it wasn't. It was my foolishness." And the minister said, "No, it was definitely Krishna's mercy, because If I was not locked up, I would have been out hunting with you. And I would have been arrested. And your body is not whole, so they let you go. But my body is whole. They would have sacrificed me. So it was Krishna's mercy. And the king understood. Well, you know, one thing he understood is that you have to be a bit Krishna conscious to be able to see things really as being Krishna's mercy. If you get down on the material level, then you'll tend to see things more just circumstantially and just, you know, life is going on. But actually Krishna's behind everything, particularly for his devotees. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question?